Welcome to The Convo. I am your host, Lakeisha Mosley. I'm a mom, a blogger, a brand influencer, and the event producer of my own event management company called The LM Experience. On The Convo, you'll hear conversations with some of the most profound entrepreneurs from all over the world as they share with us their wins and their losses. They'll also share tips and tricks with you that will help you be successful along this journey called entrepreneurship. Let's get started with the show. Well, Shasta Bell is a woman living and creating a movement of choosing self first without guilt and shame while getting quality sleep. That's right. I said getting quality sleep, but she'll tell you all about that during the interview. With over 12 years in the counseling field, including education and private practice, LaShasta has been able to get clear on how to best help others. Founding I Choose Me Counseling Practice in 2018 to be more intentional about helping others with anxiety, sleep, depression, lack of self-compassion, and awareness has been life-changing for LaShasta and many others. But I won't get too much into that. I want you to tune into the show so you can hear it for yourself. Hi, LaShasta. Thank you so much for joining me today on an episode of Convo with Keisha. How are you?
I am well, and I am so very glad to be here. How are you?
I am doing great. I am excited to have you on. You're talking about one of my favorite topics, which is mental health and how important that is to us. So before we jump into your interview, start by telling us a little bit about yourself.
So I, as you said, LaShasta Bell is my name. I am a mental health professional in the right outside of Houston area. Born, I'm a Louisiana native, but I claim Texas as home because I've been here for so many years. I absolutely love working in mental health. I feel like I've been an advocate all my life, even before I really wanted to be an advocate.
Right.
You know, it was always a problem to solve and how do we solve it? And that became a way of life of, if we see a problem, let's decide how we can help create a solution. I have a private practice, counseling practice in League City. I Choose Me. We like to token ourselves, coin ourselves as the Grey's Anatomy of private practice. Because we are a teaching community resource where I primarily hire licensed professional counselor interns to help develop, you know, competent, compassionate, and ethical counselors while providing mental health services. So our practice is twofold. It's a hand-in-hand helping type process.
Oh, I love that. So we're basically in the same area. I'm in Houston. And I'm from Louisiana. I've been in Houston about 18 years now. So I guess I'm a Texan now, you know.
Oh, okay. What part of Louisiana?
I'm from Alexandria, Louisiana.
I'm from right outside of Monroe. So we literally are from the same neck of the woods. I was born in Bastrop.
Oh, yes. Like, not that far from each other at all. So, yes, that's exciting. See, small world, small world.
Small world.
Oh my goodness. So I love how your practice is just formed. It really, to me, just like listening to you talk about it, it totally takes the stigma out of what we see as a stigma, I should say, of, you know, mental health and what it means. So how did you find yourself in the mental health field?
You know, I like to tell people I didn't find it, it found me. Mm-hmm. It was a gradual progression. I went to school for psychology at Dillard University, and I stayed there for 1 year, and then I transferred to Prairie View and changed from psychology to social work because I was explaining the theory work versus the practicality. And each place along the way, I wholeheartedly believe that God positioned someone in my life to speak the next thing over me.
Right.
And because if it were just me, I probably would still like be in the classroom or still be a school counselor because, you know, based on the way we grow up, when you get to a certain place, you feel like you've arrived.
Right.
So working in the school setting and seeing kids and their problems and understanding that the problem doesn't trickle up, it usually trickles down, is really what got me more interested in helping outside of the school setting.
Mm-hmm.
Where I could really work with every component of the problem and help solve the problem rather than like put a Band-Aid on it for the school day. So that's how, from going from social work to education to counseling in the education setting,
right,
it led me to LPC world and providing mental health services out of the education setting. So it was just a gradual transition. And I think too, we all bring our own story.
Mm-hmm.
And as I work through life and experience trauma and hurts and pains and going to seek counseling for myself and seeing how differently I felt and how I looked at the world differently after mm-hmm. that therapeutic process, it just ignited the fire that was already in place.
I absolutely love that. I felt the same thing after I booked my first, well, probably my second therapist session. My first one wasn't so great, but my second one was, and after that, it just gave me like this whole different like bounce, this whole different like vibe that, you know, made me feel like, you know, I had made the right decision and there was nothing wrong with me seeking help, that it was okay to, you know, seek help and that I would be okay in the end. It was just some things that I had to clear up and get clear about within myself. And so I just really advise a lot of people, like, seek that help, go and talk to someone, because there's nothing wrong with talking to someone.
Absolutely. It's everything right about it. And there's two things that you said that I want to kind of highlight. You were like, the first session, not so much, but then by the second session. And so understanding, one, when they seek help, it's important that it's a good fit. And
right.
Some people are like, well, how do you know it's a good fit? Well, you know, we call it a vibe. You know, in the neuroscience world, we call it a neuroception, but it's just how you feel with the other person's energy. Even if you don't know what the counseling session is supposed to be like or what you're supposed to say, you know how you feel sitting with that person. You know how to recognize the difference between this is just a discomfort because this is a new process, or
right.
this is a discomfort because I'm not really feeling the person across the room from me. And so it's important to make sure that it's a good fit as far as energy wise and personality wise, because you're about to have this person all up in your business.
Right.
You know, you want to make sure you feel comfortable sitting across from them and that in some capacity that they're relatable.
Right.
When you said the other point that there's nothing wrong with seeking mental health services, it's everything right about it. My take on it is, you know, some of us go to the eye doctor once or twice a year. Some of us go to the dentist once or twice a year. Some of us mm-hmm. go to the medical doctor at least once a year, if not more. And that's great. Our eyes need to work. Our teeth need to shine. Our bodies need to work. But when do we check in on our brain?
Yes, ma'am.
What does it matter that my teeth are white and pretty if I am out my mind and don't even know I have teeth in my mouth?
Exactly. I love how you said that. That is like, we take care of everything else but the mental health aspect of our lives. So let's jump over there, because some people may not know what mental health is. So tell us, what is mental health really?
Mental health is life, hashtag. Mental health is life. I mean, it's everything. Mental health is our thoughts, how we think. It's our behavior. It's our emotional well-being. It's when I say it's life, it literally is everything.
Right.
How we walk through the day and how we go through the day is determined by our mental health status, period. You know, some people use the word mental health and they have a negative cognition or negative association, thinking like,
right.
oh, you have a mental health disorder or a mental health issue. No, mental health within itself is how you think, how you behave, how you feel, because it's all in the brain. And from the brain, it, you know, if I'm not feeling up to par and my mood is low, then guess what? My arms are not going to want to move to work out, to go, and my legs are not going to want to move to go for a run. So it all starts with your mental health. It can affect relationships, your physical health, your daily life. So it really is all things.
Right. I think we miss the fact that we function based off of our brain. Like you said, you don't know if you got teeth in your mouth if your brain ain't right. You don't need to go get your body checked if your brain is not right. And we seem to totally miss out on the key, one of the key organs we have, and that's our brain, to make sure that we're okay. And if we're not okay, you know, we need to go and check with someone. And that's what made me go and see. I lost both of my parents like 10 months apart. So it was like, I'm feeling something, but I don't know what I'm feeling. And it's scary because one minute I'm laughing, I'm talking to you, LaShasta, the next minute I'm crying. And you like, girl, what happened? What did I say? You know, like, you don't have a clue. So for me, it was like, I need to go and get help. And I love how you came back and said, you have to make sure it fit. The first person I went to, she had a lot of like ideas in her head about Black women. She was a white therapist. And so I chose her based off the fact that she was a, she was specialized in grief. So I'm like, okay, this could be a good fit. But she had these really, really bad, I guess you can say, ideologies about Black women and their fathers. You know, she made the comment of, well, I noticed, you know, a lot of Black fathers are not in the home. And I'm like, what? Where did that come from? You know, that kind of... And then she said, well, I noticed a lot of Black professional women really don't like the Black men in their lives. And I'm like, wait a minute, where did that come from? So I was like, you know what? I need to leave homegirl alone right here. Let me go find me... someone else. And so I did find a Black therapist, because, and a lot of people are like, well, why does color matter? It matters because of the things that we deal with as Black people. I need someone that understands that. So when I see it, they know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. So what you experienced initially, and my apologies, is a therapist that showed up in a space that she wasn't competent to show up in. Mm-hmm. Because part of our code of ethics is to be culturally competent. And so it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to look like our client, but we have to be willing to make space for our client's culture and our learning of that culture so that we can meet them where they are. So not all my clients look like me, but I am culturally competent because what I don't know about their culture, I am willing to ask and not make assumptions. And so that's what happened in that place. And you're absolutely right. Sometimes we do need or want a therapist that looks like us on our journey. And but understanding that they don't necessarily have to, but they have to be willing to understand that, yes, Black people grieve differently from white people. Black people experience trauma different from white people in other cultures. Asian people grieve differently from white people. And if they don't have that space that they should have, because they sign documents to say that they do and they would, then that's where the problem and the breakup comes in. I've seen white therapists that have done great work for me. I've seen Black therapists that have done great work for me. I've seen brown, an array of therapists.
Right.
But each one was willing to ask questions to understand the parts of my culture that they did not understand. And that's where the value is, to not make assumptions or assume you know. Because I've seen Black therapists that assume that they know their Black client culture and they had it all wrong.
Whoa, yeah, that makes sense. Yes, yes. And you're right. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, because you're Black and I'm Black that we see eye to eye, because we could totally miss it. Their experience could be totally different. But you know, they are charged with, you know, being open to the person that they're supposed to be helping, you know, being open to their experience. Oh, I love you said that, because I think some people, that's why they don't reach out. That's mm-hmm. why they don't go get the help, because they do feel like I need to choose someone that's of my color. When in actuality, you're saying that's not really necessary. Choose someone who is going to be a good fit for you.
Absolutely. And part of that good fit may be to be Black. Like, and it's nothing wrong with that, because I have people call all the time that say I'm looking for a Black therapist or African-American therapist, and they feel shame or embarrassed to inquire. And I tell them, that's okay. If that's what you need, that's what you need.
Right.
And truth be told, with the environment and the culture that we're experiencing now with the police brutality and racism, mm-hmm. when Black people go get help, they do want people to look like them. And right. that's completely and totally okay. And in some cases, it's appropriate. But understanding that just choosing someone that looks like you is not the end of the work. You right. still want to make sure that it's a good fit, even with them looking like you.
Yes. So, such good information. You preach it, sis. I love it. I love it.
This is my jam, you know. And when we start talking about the brain, I have to wheel it in, because a sister can go all day about the brain and what it does and how beautiful and amazing that it is, and right. how we don't spend enough time nourishing it and giving it the attention that it needs, but we expect it to show up and do the job that we need it to do.
Yes. Yes, that's the crazy part. That's just like with our bodies. My friends tease me all the time, and I'm just like, you know, Alexa, delete my belly. They was like, girl, you need to start doing some crunches. You need to start.
I like that. That's funny. I ain't gonna say it out loud, because then she might come on and I know, try to say right? something in the background. But that is hilarious.
Yes, that is so true. So tell us more about I Choose Me.
Oh, I Choose Me. Yes, it's my practice name, but it's been a whole life journey. You know, I showed up in life in a space early in life where people depended on me for a lot of things. I grew up in a single parent home. I was next to the oldest, so that came with its own set of responsibilities. But as I showed up and I was responsible and independent, then it just seems like the more I showed up, the more responsibilities and roles and duties that I was assigned, mm-hmm. even when it wasn't necessarily in my wheelhouse. And just throughout my life, I connected value with others needing me and wanting me to do things.
Mm.
And until it got to the point where I looked up and I'm like, well, damn, where are you? Where is LaShasta? Like, who is LaShasta? Do you know her? Tell me, have you seen her? I can't sing, right. but you know that's a line of a song, right? You know, tell me, have you seen her? And right. My anxieties stayed on 10. You know, my sleep was very dysregulated. I would be in awe. And I can remember from a young age of about 7 or 8 being in awe of watching an adult fall asleep so very quickly, because even at that age, I stayed up at least an hour past bedtime, mm-hmm. replaying all of the things that happened during the day. Did I say the right thing? Did I do the right thing? You know, what others are thinking of me, and how do they feel about what I did? And is this okay? And that expanded for years. It grew and grew and grew, which means I did more and more and more for others.
Right.
And I just did not know how to say no. And I didn't even know that I needed to say no. Until it just got to the point where I absolutely just felt like I was a shell of a person. I can't even say a shell of LaShasta, because I didn't know who she was.
Right.
And so that's where I Choose Me started to come. And between culture and I'm going to say religion, not spirituality, there was guilt and shame of me even thinking that I should choose myself first. Because everything I had been taught was to be the sacrificial lamb, you know, to do mm-hmm. this for others and do that. And so there was an internal struggle that took place for me to choose me. But when I really started getting into my word and the spiritual part of me, I started to realize I had to choose me first before I could wholeheartedly show up for anyone else.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it became a journey. It became, you know, understanding myself, being more aware of what I truly like and what I didn't like, what mm-hmm. I wanted to do and say yes to, and what I'd rather say no to. And then actually doing that, it took sitting with myself, me telling my husband and my son, like, hey, I need some time by myself.
Right.
Like, I know this is strange, but I'm going to go on vacation for 2-3 days by myself. No, y'all can't come.
Exactly.
Right. You know, and it was a hard space to be in, and my husband was understanding as he could be. But the thing is, I had to get clear on what I needed before I could communicate to him what I needed. But a lot of times we look for others to give us what we need, or give us what we're giving to them. And when they don't reciprocate, we live in with this disappointment and this resentment and this bitterness. And I was done with it.
Right. Right. Yes. And I think a lot of us definitely put that those things on other people, to where we are sorely disappointed. Like, now I'm like totally unbothered. Listen, either you show up for me or you don't, but I know that I need to show up for myself regardless of the fact.
Exactly. Exactly. But I had to learn how to do that, because right. all of my life I was so very preoccupied with showing up for others. So I knew how to do it for others, but I didn't know how to do it for me. So it was a journey of learning how to be, you know, compassionate to myself.
Right. Right.
And that's a big struggle, especially when anxiety is present. And so that's where the company name I Choose Me came in, because I've been in private practice since 2012. But in 2018 is when I decided to change the name of the company and restructure and things of that nature. And it was a message. It was my tagline is healing for me, living for me. Right. Because I got to do it for myself first.
I love the energy in which LaShasta is talking about mental health and taking care of yourself. This show is good, y'all. Y'all know it's good. But we got to take a quick break and hear from our sponsor.
I love that. Oh my gosh, I love that. Yeah, you preach it, sis. We need to go on past the collection plate. I love it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And so that's where the name comes from. And my clients often say, like, it really spoke to me. Because it's not just a woman thing.
Right.
It's a people thing. Because I have male clients that come in and say, like, I'm so busy being a provider that I don't do anything I enjoy. I don't even know what I enjoy. I feel like once I became a husband, I had to stop doing this, this, this. And so many people allow society and social norms yep. to define who they're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But the only problem is, once they define it, they don't show you how to walk it out in a healthy way.
Nope. Nope. You are absolutely right. That's why I'm so loving the whole premise behind your organization, because that is exactly what it is that we don't tap into. It's like a whole nother realm that we leave out.
Mm-hmm.
We're sorely disappointed. You know, we're sorely upset because, okay, I showed up for you, but where you at, bro? Where you at, sis? You know, mm-hmm. Like you say, we need to start choosing ourselves daily. Just to make sure we're okay. Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it.
And that goes back to mm-hmm. addressing the mental health. And yeah. people talk about self-care. So, you know, I think it's watered down. I think it's overused. I think it's misconstrued in media, but that's part of life. But self-care literally is any thought or action that you can do to improve your mental or physical health.
Mm-hmm.
It literally, you can do self-care in 30 seconds. So when I recently had a client, she was like, I don't know if I could tell people no. I really feel like I'm a people pleaser. And I say yes, because I want to belong. I want to fit in. And I just told her, okay, just when someone presents something to you that you would usually volunteer for or say yes, just pause for a moment and ask yourself, do I really want to do it?
Right.
It it takes a few seconds to ask that question. That's that self-awareness piece that's mentioned in my published journal.
Mm-hmm.
Self-awareness, it just take a moment. And literally the next week, within 7 days, she reported being able to say no to a friend or not volunteer her services, that she asked herself, like, do I want to? She was like, no, like, I don't. I love that. I love being around this person. I love this, but I just want to spend some time this evening at home by myself. You know?
Yes. Yes. That is a good thing. And you know what else? This kind of segues into our next question. I just did a blog post that said that self-care and sleep are non-negotiable and they are not interchangeable. It's not one Ooh. Or the other, but they are not. So I noticed you mentioned in your bio sleep. That is so different, sis. Tell us more about that. Cause again, sleep and self-care, they not the same thing. And it's not one or the other.
Right. Well, and so sleep can be considered self-care, but sleep really is a beast all its own.
Right.
Like, it needs to be held in high regard. But unfortunately, for entrepreneurs especially, but I think in our culture too, we equate hustle with no sleep, and it's like a badge of honor.
Yes. Yes.
I'm just saying that it ends up falling like that. But sleep is the space and the time that everything gets to go offline for a little bit and revamp to be ready for the next day.
Exactly.
Our brain does so many amazing things when we sleep. One of them being, and for lack of better terms, our stress hormones re-up at night when we sleep. So that's the reason why, like, if you don't get a good night's sleep one night, that next day, your patience is not as good. Your Right. tolerance is less. Your focus is less. Because you cut short your brain process and going into those different realms of sleep to re-up that stress hormone so that you'll be good and ready for the next day. And then some people continually not rest well, then they turn to caffeine and it just snowballs. So sleep is so very vital. And then for those who suffer with anxiety, we learn in our profession that exercise and sleep are two, on a consistent basis, are two things that can decrease the anxiety activation level. Not anxious moments, but we talking about the whole shabam.
Exactly.
Like, bam, just like Lord.
Yes.
Just like, boom, just go to bed. And that's one of the projects that I'm working on. Go to BED, Anxiety is Overrated.
Right.
And the premise of that ebook and the upcoming workbook is to help people understand the value and the importance of sleep and how to create good sleep hygiene so that everything else works out better. It's literally like sleep is our foundation, but we look at it like it's an accessory.
Yeah, we do. We absolutely do. And I remember seeing a post, I want to say it may have been on Twitter or somewhere, but someone absolutely just said what you said, to where we as entrepreneurs, we wear this whole hustle mentality as a badge of honor, and we feel like sleep is not an option. And she basically was saying in the tweet, she was like, I go to bed. And I'm going to continue to go to bed. I run 3 businesses. I'm a mom. I'm a wife. I'm active in my community and my church. And she was like, and I still go to bed every night by 9:30. And she said, I will continue to do that because I am not going to deprive myself of sleep to make other people feel like I'm working. Because people tend to think we're not working if we're not up all night and we're not, you know, hustling, which is in their terms. And I was like, oh, girlfriend, I feel you. That is so true.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm telling you, people, and before I, as a professional, started to specialize and get more knowledge and training around sleep and anxiety, I placed value on my sleep. Like, people knew I need a solid 7 hours to function. Well, now in COVID, I need about 8 and a half.
Yes.
And that's to be expected. But folks know, my phone goes to do not disturb. My mom laughs, and she now shares this with other people, because I say, if it's an emergency, you should call 911 anyway before you call me.
Hello.
Like, if it's that kind of emergency, because she's in Louisiana. So if it's not the people in my house, if you're outside of my home, you should call 911 first. And if it's severe, 911 gonna get in touch with me.
Right.
And you want a well-rested me anyway. You want me on my A game to support you in your crisis.
Exactly.
So my sleep is sacred. It's valuable. I will literally be like, okay, it's 10 o'clock, 10:30. I had a friend text me last night. She was like, what you doing up at 10:07? Because she knows, like, clockwork, I'm in that bed. But she saw something posted on my social media page. And I'm like, girl, that's scheduling. That's scheduling and analytics. I didn't post that.
Right.
I texted her this morning because guess what? Your girl was in the bed asleep.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I love that. Yes. I think we all need to adapt, you know, some of that, because you're right. How can you function in life? How can your brain function, which is the hub from everything else, if you ain't getting no sleep?
Mm-hmm. It can't. And so you start to gain more weight. Your eating habits become more unhealthy. Your anxieties go up. Your depression increases. The depressed mood increases. Your perspective, your ability to be empathetic and tolerate others decreases. Every part of our being is disrupted.
Yes. Yes. And we need to get in the bed, like go to sleep.
That's it. Go to BED. And that BED, when I speak and train, stands for brain dump, exercise, and developing a routine.
Right.
So those are three things that you can do to start to regulate yourself and your sleep. Because with so many things uncertain right now, with COVID and returning to school, educators returning to work, non-educators wondering if they're going to have a job. Right. The thing that's in our control is our sleep.
That's true. That's the only thing that we can control right now. And we need to just be okay with that and go to bed, because we can't change nothing else at this moment.
That's it. But if I go to bed and I attend to my sleep, then the next morning, I got all my good stress hormones ready to tackle the day.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh my gosh, I'm loving this. So tell us, what's one thing we can do today to improve our mental health?
So one thing you can do today to improve your mental health is to take time to sit and decide how important is your mental health to you.
Yes, ma'am.
What value you place on it. And literally take a few seconds. You don't need any material. You don't have to write anything down. Just ask yourself, what value do I place on my mental health? And after you answer it, it's because some people are like, oh, I value my mental health. I'm real concerned. Okay, how do I show?
Right.
How do I show that value? How does it show up every single day?
Exactly.
And if people say, well, I'm good on my mental health, LaShasta, what else can I do? Express gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Wake up with gratitude. Go to bed with gratitude. That will improve your mental health. Get your sleep.
Right.
You know, get the screens out your face before bedtime. Create a routine around bedtime and be intentional about doing the same thing every single day in the same order before bed, because you're training your brain that it's time to go to sleep. You know, I know that's more than one thing, but it's so many. I'm speaking to all the population. So wherever you're at on your mental health journey, whether you're just starting or whether you are intentional and need more support, or whether you feel like I have things in a bag, but COVID has thrown me off, it's something for everyone to do and to implement slightly different from what they're doing to create a change in their mental health.
Right, No, I love all of those. I think that it, I think you, it's hard to give just one thing because we're all multifaceted and there are certain things that have to be done. And I love the gratitude part. I just did a post on Facebook today where I said, you know, have you told, you know, someone how much you appreciate them? And I actually tagged people, you know, and I even put at the end, like, if I didn't tag you, you know, because Facebook limits that, just know that I love you and I appreciate you. There is something that goes through you when you are grateful for things and you are grateful for people. Like someone that just loves my post, likes my post, shares my post, how we got connected, someone tags you. I'm grateful for those people in my life. They sow into my life and my business. And it was just something about after I sent that post, I just felt so happy. Like I was already happy. You know, nothing was wrong, but there was just like this surge of happiness that just came over me. And I send out what I call gratitext. I send out texts randomly to people that say, thank you for sowing into my life, or I appreciate you, or I love you. Just different things, because sometimes we don't know how that affects the person we just sent that to.
Exactly. And so part of what you're experiencing, I'm gonna go back to the brain, because that's where everything starts. When you express gratitude, there's something that takes place in the brain that ends up stimulating like a lasting change in the prefrontal cortex. And so that's the reason that you feel good, and it's delightful, because there's a shifting and change that's taking place in the brain. Research shows like if we express gratitude for a certain period of time intentionally, that it will decrease depression. It will release you from depression. So one of the things that I did when COVID first started impacting our world, and even a little bit before then, because I was having my own personal struggles before COVID even showed up, right, is I was like, I'm gonna do a gratitude wall. So every day for 33 days, it was supposed to be for like 14, but I just kept going. So I ended at 33, and I thought it was pretty symbolic because that was Jesus was 33 when he died on the cross. But, and it wasn't even intentional to stop at 33, but at 33 is the day that I felt like, you know what, I'm good. I don't need to do this intentionally anymore. But I wrote on a post-it every single day for 33 days, three things that I was grateful for.
Oh, I love that. That's a great idea. That is a great idea.
It was amazing and it was life-changing. So some things that helped, that stood out for me. I got to see what I value most in life. And one of the things that I place a lot of value on is the sun.
Right.
I tell my clients all the time, the sun and I have a special relationship. But the sun kept coming up for me. That I was grateful for the sun. I was grateful for the sun, grateful to be able to be outside, to be outdoors, even though my allergies don't appreciate it.
Right.
My mental health appreciates it. So I'll sacrifice sneezing for my mental health, because like you said, that's my hub. And it was just no rhythm and rhyme. Whatever three things that came up for me at that moment, that's what I wrote. If it was a repeat, that was fine. But then I became grateful for my struggle, because it was in that place that I learned and I grew. I became grateful for the ability to manage my schedule, right, or to, it just, it's amazing what will flow out, but then it also set the tone for my day. So throughout that day, like you said, how it just felt good, I had an extra feel good and wanting to see the upside of life in that day. So that's really one of the bigger components that helped me through the start of COVID and business changing, because I have a private practice. Clients want to come in face to face. They don't want to do video, and you have to transition your therapist over. And it was so many different changes. And it was like, that is one of the key things that sustained me and my mental health,
right,
in the transitions with COVID.
Yes. Oh my gosh, sis. You have dropped so many nuggets. I am loving everything that you have shared with us. I know the audience, like, y'all better have y'all notebooks out, taking notes, because this is such great information, and it's so prevalent for, like, right now. It's so going on that we have to take care of ourselves right now, and if we don't, we're going to find ourselves, you know, in a pit, like in a mental pit that may be just really hard to come out of. I'm not going to say it's impossible, but it may be really hard to come out of that because of everything that's going on.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. You know, we got time today, you know?
Right. Exactly.
And you have time to spend 30 seconds to think about one thing you're going to do to be intentional about improving your mental health or physical health, because that's self-care. You have time to think about how you value your mental health and how you can show that externally. It takes a thought. It doesn't take money. It doesn't take action. It just takes being intentional and wanting to choose yourself first.
Right. That's so true. Oh my gosh, I am loving this. This is so, so awesome. So tell us how we can get connected to you and any products that you have available. I'll make sure all of that is in the show notes.
Okay, so they can reach me through my website, ichooseme2day.org. I'm on Instagram and Facebook, ichooseme2day on both of them. Also for speaking and training, it's my website is LaShastaBell.com, so they can hop over to there. I have graphic tees, message tees, like my No Game Is Strong, Jesus Had Boundaries Too, I Choose Me, Look Where You're Going or Your Go Where You're Looking. I also have a 3-day guided journal that's over a year of journaling available on both websites. You can purchase a digital copy or a paper copy. And it helps to guide you through the process of self-awareness, intentionality, and self-reflection.
Man, yeah, I'm about to go shopping because I love all of that. That is great. It is so, so great to hear all of this. And I really, really love it. And I love your passion. I love how intentional you are. And I love the fact that you are helping people not only just with their issues, but to see that it's okay to reach out for help and to get the assistance that you need. So I definitely appreciate you.
Well, thank you so much. It absolutely is okay. It's more than okay. It's a necessity for life.
Right. Definitely. So we will definitely have you back on. This is a topic that we cannot stop talking about. We must continue to talk about it. So we'll definitely have you back on to tell us more. Maybe you could get deep with a sis, because I'm intrigued to hear about the brain and how all that works, because that sounds very interesting.
Lee, I would love to come back. I can talk mental health all day, every day.
Yes, we will definitely have you back on. So thanks again for joining us.
Thank you. You have a great one.
You too.
Thank you for tuning in to The Convo. I hope you enjoyed the show. Be sure to subscribe on Anchor or Apple Podcasts.